Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week we'll discuss the Enroll America organization with Maryland Citizens Health Initiative President Vinnie DeMarco and grassroots mobilization efforts with AFGE Veterans Affairs Local 2338 President Kevin Ellis. We'll also look back at AFGE's recent human rights training conference with 5th District National Vice President Everett Kelly, Defense Conference Vice Chair Patty Byers, and VA Local 2157 First Vice President Marsha Blaine. But up first, Vinnie DeMarco, President of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. Vinnie, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Jason. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Vinnie, you have some big things going on these days with the Enroll America Initiative. It's an organization to promote health coverage enrollment to millions of uninsured people. Tell us about it.
Well, this organization is a national, new national nonprofit whose goal is to make sure that everyone who's eligible for health care under the wonderful new Affordable Care Act signed by President Obama next year gets that coverage. As you know, Jason, under the law, over 30 million people who don't have health care now will get health care. And we want to make sure that everybody who is eligible gets enrolled. And the organization includes Families USA. It includes insurance companies. It includes faith groups. It includes prescription drug companies. It includes everybody who's got a strong interest, community health centers, everybody who has a strong interest in making sure that everybody who is eligible gets enrolled. And, you know, we know that the Affordable Care Act could not have happened without the strong support from organized labor and groups like AFGE. And we know that you all have an interest, like all Americans, in making sure that the law is fully taken advantage of. Now, we at Maryland Citizens Health Initiative are included in this, and we're honored to be included because we are one of the states that has done a lot to make sure that people know about expanded health care and get enrolled. When the National Affordable Care Act passed, we made sure that everybody knew that if you're under 26, you can stay on your parents' health care now. And it's paid off. The new census data shows that uninsured rate amongst people under 26 has gone down, which is wonderful. And we've worked to make sure that small businesses know that they can now get a federal tax credit if they have less than 25 employees and make less than $50,000 a year. They can get a federal tax credit on their health care, which is great. But most of the health care coverage doesn't start till 2014 when the Medicaid expansion and the health insurance exchanges kick in, and we're going to make sure that people know about it and get enrolled. In Maryland, we made progress by having radio ads featuring our wonderful Governor Martin O'Malley and Ed Reed from the Ravens and Chris Samuels from the Redskins, and those ads got a lot of people to know about the law and get health care. So we're thrilled to be part of Enroll America, and we're going to make it work.
Vinnie, this list of participants in the Enroll America organization is extensive and very diverse. How did you get so many different groups to come together on this?
Well, the credit goes to Ron Pollitt from Families USA and Rachel Klein, the executive director of Enroll America. The two of them did a great outreach to organizations which don't always agree on everything, but they do agree on this. Everybody who's eligible for the new Affordable Care Act coverage should get it. And Jason, it's an incredible list, and we're honored to be on it.
Talk about some of the key aspects of the Affordable Care Act that we have yet to see, the ones that are coming in 2014.
Number one, the Medicaid expansion. We in Maryland have done a lot to expand Medicaid to lower-income people. One thing that Marylanders are understanding and Americans understand is that if your income is really low and you can't afford any health insurance, it's in everybody's interest for you to get health coverage, because if you go to the hospital and you can't afford it and you get very expensive treatments, we all pay. It's a kind of a hidden health care tax. According to Families USA, everybody in their insurance premium spends about $1,000 a year on coverage for the on health care for the uninsured. So instead, let's use smart ways to expand coverage through the Medicaid program to lower income people, and we all benefit by reducing uncompensated hospital care. So as of 2014, Everybody in Maryland who makes less than 133, everybody in America, I'm sorry, who makes less than 133% of poverty, which is about $30,000 a year for a family of four, will get full Medicaid coverage. And that's good for them, it'll save lives, and it's good for all of us by making sure they don't aren't using hospital services that we all have to pay for anyway. So that's number one. Number two, the new exchanges are created. And, you know, every state is supposed to create a healthcare exchange to help provide healthcare for people in an affordable way. Many states aren't doing the right thing, but in Maryland, we are. Under Governor O'Malley, Lieutenant Governor Brown, Health Secretary Sharfstein, we've created a healthcare exchange board that's putting together a wonderful system to make sure that people who are above the Medicaid level get coverage in an affordable way. So those are the two main things. In addition, people will not be able to be denied by the insurance companies if they have pre-existing conditions. That's been a problem for so many people. Can't happen anymore after 2014. Now, as a part of that, everybody's going to have a personal responsibility to find health care one way or the other. And that makes sense, Jason, because if you can afford health care but don't get the coverage and you go to the hospital and run up a huge bill, we all pay. So everybody will get coverage and everybody should do their fair share. That's why the Affordable Care Act just makes so much sense. And Enroll America is going to make sure that everybody who's eligible for all these programs takes advantage of it.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Vinny DeMarco, president of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative, about the Enroll America organization. Vinny, how important was it for healthcare reform to happen when it did?
It was critical. As we just saw, before the healthcare reform law takes effect 2014, uninsured numbers are going up because of the economy being bad, and it was absolutely going to create an incredible disaster for America if these numbers kept going up. Luckily, the Affordable Care Act passed. President Obama did a great job in getting that passed. No other president's been able to do this, and now we'll be able to reverse that and bring the health uninsured rate down and expand coverage for everyone so that we all benefit when people aren't using their hospital care and raising everybody's insurance premiums. It happened exactly at the right time. There are two goals of the Affordable Care Act: to make sure everybody's covered and to make sure health care is affordable for everyone. And we're going to, Maryland at least, I can tell you this, under leadership of Governor O'Malley, Lieutenant Governor Brown, we are going to make sure those goals are met.
Now, Vinny, do you see the Affordable Care Act as a way to separate people's health care coverage from their jobs so that if something happens to their job, they aren't necessarily going to go without health coverage?
Well, we want to make sure that everybody has health care coverage and everybody can afford it. Most people will continue to be covered through their workplace, and that makes sense. That's the way our system is working now, and for most people it's working fine. But if you do lose your job or you change jobs, there should be either the Medicaid or this exchange to make sure that your health care coverage continues. And you're right. After 2014, there'll be millions of people who won't have to worry that if something has their job, they won't have health care.
Because as we've seen a number of cases where someone may become sick or lose their job and have really high health care expenses, something that could push them into tough financial times, even bankruptcy, right?
Right. Half of all bankruptcy are caused by people who have health care costs they can't afford. That's bad for them. It's bad for the economy. It's bad for all of us. By taking such a wonderful step forward in dealing with the healthcare crisis, President Obama is helping society as a whole. And our economy is going to be much better when there are less people uninsured and less people facing the bankruptcies you talked about.
Now, as you were going through some of the points of the Affordable Care Act, Vinny, you mentioned one which is important to a lot of people, which is you won't be denied. You can't be denied for having a pre-existing condition. Talk about the importance of that key point.
Well, so many horror stories happen all around the country where people have cancer or other illnesses and can't get insurance, and they're the ones who really need the insurance to keep alive and to keep themselves out of hospitals running up huge uncompensated care costs. And the good news is The really good news is that as of when the Affordable Care Act was passed, 6 months after that last year, insurance companies can't deny children health insurance because of pre-existing conditions. And that's wonderful protection for children. But as of 2014, that'll apply to everybody. And that is really tremendous. We have seen here in Maryland horror stories of people whose lives are ruined because they had a pre-existing condition, couldn't get health insurance. Not going to happen. Not going to happen anymore.
And Vinny, if we could take a look back, I know we have had you on a number of times and we've talked about this issue, but I'd like to review when the Affordable Care Act was signed and put into law, there were some key points that took effect right away. Could you talk about some of those?
Yeah. The three key ones, in my opinion, were: one, young people under age 26 can stay on their parents' health plan. This is really, really important. It's always been true that the highest rate of uninsured insurance was from people between 18 and 30 because it's hard to get a job right away that has health insurance coverage. We led the way in Maryland, one of the states that led the way when we allowed young people in 2007 to stay on their parents' health plan up to age 25. That law was expanded to 26 at the federal level, and now all around the country, young people can stay on their parents' health care up to age 26. That is wonderful for thousands and thousands of young people and their families, millions around the country. Secondly, small businesses that have trouble affording health care can now get a special federal tax credit for up to 35% of the cost of their health care if they have less than 25 employees and they earn less than $50,000 a year. And we've been out there holding press conferences with local leaders in Salisbury, Charles County, and Frederick in Maryland. We're having one in a couple weeks with County Executive Kevin Kamenetz of Baltimore County. We're letting businesses know about it, and we've identified over 100 small businesses who didn't know about it and now do and are going to take advantage of it, and we're going to do a lot more of that. And third, as I just mentioned, was children can no longer be denied a health insurance because they have pre-existing conditions. I think those are three of the most important things that have taken effect already.
Vinny DeMarco, president of the Maryland Citizens Health Initiative. Vinny, thank you so much for your time. It's always great to have you on the program.
Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE VA Local 2338 President Kevin Ellis will talk about his local's grassroots mobilization efforts.
Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to buy items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount with promo code AFGEMember. That's all one word. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Kevin Ellis, the newly elected president of AFGE Veterans Affairs, Local 2338 in Poplar Bluff, Missouri. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jason.
And as a newly elected local president for AFGE, first off, congratulations to you.
Thank you very much. I am looking forward to it.
And speaking of looking forward, what are some of your goals as a new local president here at AFGE?
You know, one of our short-term goals is we want to begin to educate local areas in which we live and work every single day. One of the misconceptions about a union and about labor organizations
is that we are evil and we're worthless, and that's just simply not the case. So our short-term goal here is to get reorganized, reestablish our union, and begin to integrate with our local areas here to inform our local communities that we are just like they are, working-class families and just middle-class workers.
What are some of the methods that you're going to use to go about reaching out to the public and connecting with the community there in your area?
You know, one thing I thought was very, very important. Here in small areas like I live, people read a lot of newspapers and listen to a lot of talk radio. And one of the things that I thought about that we really needed to do was to contact our local editors at our local newspaper stations, our local radio stations, and our local news channels to inform them that government employees are not overpaid federal fat cats. And, you know, that is one of our short-term goals, because I believe that if you can change the opinion at the grassroots level in your smaller towns, that we can begin to change the tone that's being sent out by Washington.
Kevin, what led you to not only federal service, but on again into the labor movement?
You know, I have always been a Democrat at heart. And one of the things that I can tell you, growing up as a kid, I've always been one of those that wanted to help people. I can recall being a small kid when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and my grandmother raised me, and she took me out with her one day on work, and she was a green thumber. And what a green thumber did in those days was they went to low-income families and taught them how to plant their own gardens, can their own vegetables, and things of that nature. And from a very young age, it was really a burden upon my heart to always be helpful to people. And when I learned about AFGE and what it was fighting for and the issues that were at hand, I just had to become a part of it. I just could not afford to stand and sit on the sidelines any longer.
Share with the audience your thoughts on how a labor organization like AFGE can be the driving force behind equality in the workplace.
You know, this is the part where I really think that we need to get our message out to the local community. AFGE, for probably about 2 centuries, have just been the driving force behind working-class families. Some of the things that we have done in years past was we've secured accumulation of vacation days, sick days. We reduced the work day from 12 to 14 hours down to 8 hours a day. We help families get flexible work schedules. There are just so many things that labor unions have done for working class members and people all across this country, and we don't realize it. Health care is a very, very big issue. You know, people talk about health care and about all of these issues that are facing the community. If it had not been for labor organizations, and this can be easily researched, this country would be no different from a country like China or Russia or Cuba. Labor organizations have been the driving force and have brought equality to the working class families. They brought equality to just every part of our community. Labor organizations have actually improved private sector, because without the labor unions asking and demanding for fair pay and fair treatment and fair representation, the private sector wouldn't be as advanced as they are now. And even though they have advanced some, they could advance so much further if they would just get behind the labor movement and support it.
And speaking of advancing it further, what are a couple of key issues that you're looking at advancing throughout your time as a local president?
No, a couple of key issues. My main issue, like I said earlier, is just we have to get out and we have to be visible within our communities. We have to continue to support our communities, support our veterans. You know, when Washington talks about cutting government spending, they're talking about cutting jobs. And when they're talking about cutting jobs, they're talking about taking food off the table. They're talking about taking gasoline out of the gas tank. They're talking about homes going into foreclosures, cars being repossessed, kids having to drop out of college. You know, this is a message that we need to take to America, that labor organizations and government employees are just middle-class working people. Some people here within our own communities, and I've talked to them, they thought that government employees receive free health care. and free pension plans, and that is just simply not the case. I know education has to be the top priority, and if you can educate the public and you can educate the community and you can educate your members, you know, that's something that will go a long way. We're going to have to mobilize. You know, silence can be very deadly, and it can be dangerous. And one of the things that I realized happened over the past couple of months is that we kind of left our vice president hanging. Vice President Biden was here a couple of months ago when they were talking about the deficit and how they were going to balance the budget and cutting government spending. AFGE sent out a national request to all 270,000 members and asked us to sign a petition either by email or by hard copy paper. The unfortunate thing and the unintended message that was sent was we didn't care, because out of 270,000 signatures that were requested, we were only able to harness 16,000. Now, you know, when I told my members that happened, they were just in complete silence. They could not believe and understand that that happened to us. But that was the unintended message if we remain quiet. So we have to get out there and we have to reintroduce ourselves and reintroduce our new workforce to what the old unions did for us.
Now, Kevin, how does it make you feel when people attack the federal workforce and the services that you provide the American public?
No, as you can probably tell, I'm very compassionate about this issue. It doesn't make me feel very good, and I realize that it all comes back to education. We serve here at John J. Pershing, we live in a little small town, and we service about 18,000 veterans and their families. So that number could very easily be about 60,000 people, because when you support the veteran and you give the veteran care, you also support that veteran's family. And it really hurts me. It really hurts me more than it does anger me that people misinterpret and misunderstand what we do. You know, we send veterans off to combat. They serve this country. Some of them come back with injuries. Some of them come back with mental illnesses and so forth. And just the thought that they're attacking the same institution that sent them over and the same individuals that are trying to help them, it really just saddens me. I'm really, really disappointed when I hear that type of language. It just really disappoints me.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Kevin Ellis, president of AFGE VA Local 2338. Kevin, earlier this week there was a report in the Washington Post that indicated most federal employees are actually located outside of the D.C. metro area. And as we know, many of these federal employees work in small towns like yours, where the federal government is the main employer. Talk about the role that the federal government plays in putting workers in your town to work.
You know, boy, I tell you, I could go on and on about this all day long. Being a choice employee in this town I live in has about 17,000 people in it. And that's really including the outlying little small towns like Dexter and Keelan and Puxico and East Carter. We are a main employer here. And if you take those jobs and if you take those benefits away from them families, it really devastates our community. And it's a big point of emphasis with me. Don't cut federal jobs. Don't cut benefits. Don't cut pensions, because you affect everyday working people. You know, it really bothers me that the issues at hand are really not really being discussed as it affects people in our smaller towns. I remember a few years ago paying about a dollar to maybe a dollar 10 per gallon for gasoline. And over the next two or three years, that has grown to about $3.50 a gallon to maybe $4 a gallon. And that is $2 that comes out of our community that goes into the pockets of big oil. That's $2 that I don't have to spend on going to the movies, taking my family out to dinner. I can't buy clothing. I can't buy tennis shoes. I mean, we struggle to buy necessities that we have to have here within our small area. So I know when you talk about taking jobs and how it affects the American people, it affects us here every single day.
Sure, and at a time when workers need jobs and the economy is still working its way back to full strength, I imagine a time like this would be a very hard time to cut jobs in small towns.
It is devastating. You know, there has been some discussion here lately that we have been asked to, our facility has been asked to cut maybe anywhere from 80 to 100 jobs over the next couple of years or so. Well, you know, when you have an employer that employs about 500 individuals, 80 to 100 jobs is about 20% of your workforce. And that's a huge, huge, huge number. That is a, that number is alarming.
Kevin, talk about the emphasis now that you're going to put on organizing new members and getting them involved in Local 2338.
You know, word of mouth here spreads very quickly and very easy. And we've got to get out here and we've got to begin beating the bushes. You know, we left everything up to our president and our vice president. We elected a Obama into office and Joe Biden. And I think for us at the grassroots level, we just took our hands off thinking, well, he's going to fix everything. This new Congress can do whatever they need to do. But that was not the case at all. So what we've began asking our members to do is pick up the telephone, call your elected representatives, call your senators, call your mayors, call and talk to businesses, call and talk to newspapers, and tell them, you know, this is not right, and we need to stop assaulting the middle-class workers, stop assaulting our families, stop assaulting our dreams, stop assaulting everything that labor organizations and middle-class families have lived and died for.
Kevin Ellis, president of AFGE VA Local 2338. Kevin, thank you for your time and good luck with your grassroots movement.
Thank you very much, Jason.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE 5th District National Vice President Everett Kelly and Defense Conference Vice Chair Patty Byers will discuss the critical work done by the civilian DOD workforce.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Everett Kelly, AFGE District 5 National Vice President. MVP Kelly, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back, Jason.
I believe this is your first interview with us since you became National Vice President for AFGE. Congratulations.
Thank you. That is correct.
We have you here today at the Human Rights Training Conference in Atlanta. What are you doing here this week?
We're here. We're hosting the event this week, Jason. First of all, I'd like to welcome everybody to the 5th District. But we anticipate a good week. MVP Augusta Thomas has did a great job, her staff, at preparing an agenda that will be beneficial for our activists.
How important is it for AFGE members and activists and leaders to be trained on these human rights issues?
Well, I think it's definitely very important because, you know, as you know, in the workforce, in the workplace, you know, we deal with issues every single day that affect our employees and the workers, federal workers. You know, the civil rights, the equal rights is a part of what we do, and we need to make sure that our activists are trained so that they can make sure that employees' rights are protected.
And what a perfect venue for it than Atlanta, Georgia, very historical in the sense of civil rights movement, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. One of the greatest, in my opinion, one of the greatest civil rights leaders is actually from this area, so it's just a great venue, it's true.
Tell the audience a little bit about some of the classes that are here this week for members to participate in.
Well, you have your basic EEO training, you have your new leaders training, but, you know, the one that I'm waiting for is the new social media training, which is going to be very good, which gives you an opportunity to really learn how to network with your members, you know, and that type of thing. But it's going to be some great training this week.
Sure. And that's on that social media piece. That's very beneficial for the members because the communication staff is actually going to take each participant through step by step how to build a Facebook page, how to build a Twitter account. That's very important for people to know these days.
Absolutely. Yes. I'm looking forward to it.
Now that you're National Vice President, District 5, what are your top priorities?
Well, the top priorities, I would say, is to get our district really functioning again. As you know, MVP Flowers did an awesome job, but, you know, unfortunately, she was very ill for a period of time, and in my opinion, the district was without really good leadership. So my objective is to really bring the leadership back to the district to get to where we are organizing and definitely standing out as being the very best district in the Federation.
You mentioned a very, very key piece of your priorities there, and that's organizing.
Oh, yes.
Talk about your agenda for organizing in District 5.
Well, I have good plans, I think, for organizing in the 5th District. Matter of fact, we have a wide range of area to cover. We have a lot of DOD locals, which we want to really organize. And I've spoken with the DEFCON and that group about, you know, really coming into the 5th District and organizing. But we also have the TSA that we plan on really organizing the TSA campaign. Matter of fact, I have two positions right now that's actually open that we're going to gear toward the TSA campaign, because we won a historical battle. But now we have to go in and organize those members within TSA to make sure that they understand the importance of being a part of AFGE.
How important is that TSA victory for moving the union forward? That was a 9-year battle to get those workers the rights that they deserve and to organize them.
I think it was a very important battle. I think it was a very important victory. I think it speaks well for our union, for AFGE, the fact that we won that battle. It was a very tough battle, as you know. But I think that it says that they trust AFGE. I think it said that TSA want AFGE to represent them, and we now must go in and organize and make sure that they know that we're there to do exactly what we promised them to do.
When you traveled around your district during the TSA campaign, what did the workers tell you? What did they want from the union?
I think more than anything, I think they wanted to know that they had a sense of security. I think that they wanted to know that, you know, they had somebody to speak for them in their behalf, and certainly this past, they want it gone. So those are the initiatives I think that AFGE will work on to make sure that we accomplish for them.
Do you think now that AFGE is the exclusive representative for these TSOs and the union gets working on bargaining a contract with management, that we'll see morale improve, maybe turnover will be less at TSA?
I think so. I think that's very key. I think the fact that, you know, we're working toward a contract, once we have a contract in place, I think you'll see morale really boosted. I think you'll see people wanting to stay with TSA long periods of time because they'll know that they have something that they can depend on, such as a contract. They have a union that will be there to back them, you know, so I think it'll mean a lot for the TSA workers.
Now, before you became a national vice president, you obviously were a local president representing DOD workers. What are some challenges that DOD workers face today?
Well, DOD workers are facing a lot of challenges right now. You know, there was talk about the possibility of a BRAC. There is talk about changing core logistic laws, the 50-50. There's certainly talk about, you know, benefits being taken away, retirement, and those type of things that, you know, we've been facing for some time. It's just that, you know, it's coming back to the front now.
And so what do you plan on doing as the leader of District 5 to fight back against these attacks against DOD workers?
Well, I plan on continuing to work with DEFCON. I plan on continuing to work with the not now just the state of Alabama, but I have all the congressional in the 5 states in Puerto Rico. Where Puerto Rico don't have the congressional. But I plan on working with the elected delegation to make sure that our issues are out front, that everybody understand our issues, and let them know that AFGE is here to fight in whatever way we need to fight to make sure that people hear and understand that our issues are real.
This has been a tough year for federal employees. They seem to have a target on their backs from legislators, from the state level, up to the federal level. How does that make you feel as a federal employee yourself that there are people out there who are looking to make cutbacks to all kinds of key public services?
Personally, it makes me feel really that, you know, my services really have not been appreciated. As a federal worker, understanding, you know, the importance of getting the job done and getting it done efficiently and to make sure that it's done, you know, at a minimum cost, you know, has meant a lot to me in my career as a federal employee. But the fact that people seemingly has a target on the federal employee and seem to think that we're not getting the job done, it makes us feel really like, you know, we're not appreciated. And we make sure every day that we give the very best we can for the American public.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE 5th District National Vice President Everett Kelly. Everett, why do you think federal employees have such a target on their backs?
Well, I think it's because people really, the American public, doesn't really understand what we do. I think that the legislators, many of them, is playing politics rather than trying to get the job done. And I think that we are targets of a political battle, and people are not really concerned about getting the American public what they need. And so we're in the middle of a political battle right now. And I think that's unfortunate, and I think it's unfair.
You make a great point about getting people what they need, because that's what federal employees do, right? They serve the public.
Absolutely.
So going forward, again, what do you think needs to be done to fight back against these attacks, to educate people about what federal employees really do?
I think it's incumbent upon each federal employee, matter of fact, you know, on top of what we should be doing as the national AFGE in the district, I think that each federal employee also has to begin to let the American people know exactly what we do every day. We need to let people know that, hey, if we don't work, there are some people out there that won't get their Social Security check. We need to let people know that if we don't work, there are some people out there that will not get their VA benefits that they deserve. Or there are some soldiers on the field that might not get the tanks or the small arm weapons that they need in order to fight the battle. I think this is the type of message that we need to begin to send as individuals.
AFGE 5th District National Vice President Everett Kelly, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jason.
We've been joined by Patty Viers, DEFCON Vice Chair, and also President of AFGE Local 1148. Patty, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's great to be back, Jason.
So today we've got you in Atlanta at
yes.
the Human Rights Training Conference here. What are you doing?
Well, I'm in training this week, learning a little bit about diversity, and, you know, it's a nice shot in the arm. It's something that we all need to do, even though that's what our goal is, you know, as union folks, but this has been a great conference.
What have you learned so far on the diversity piece here at the conference?
Well, it's a huge reminder that you know, people that look like us and are not the people that we deal with all the time, and we have to think about the differences, and we have to figure out how we're going to get along, and that's what this class is teaching me how to do, is reminding me, you know, the things that I need to know to get along with people that aren't necessarily like me.
How important is that, to have trainings like this every year that remind people of these things, refresh their skills in these areas?
Oh, it is so vital that we keep on having these types of conferences, human rights conferences. It brings us back to our roots. It brings us back to why we're union people. This fills me so full of energy when I come to these things.
Speaking of roots, your roots are pretty entrenched in DOD and some issues going on there. Tell us what's the latest.
You know, it's not a good time to be a DOD employee. We're a proud workforce, but right now the sights are on defense for these trillions and trillions of dollars of cuts. And I know the Secretary of Defense has said, please leave DOD alone, but I don't know how we're going to escape that. What we've got to figure out is the best way to do that and maintain national security and give employees a soft place to land.
Many times when these budget discussions come up, the military itself is never touched, but the impact is significant whenever you're cutting back on the individuals who support the military.
Well, what we know now is when Afghanistan and Iraq happened, that the Department of Defense ramped up 96,000 jobs from 2001 or whatever, 2003 until now. What we're learning is that not only are we going to lose those 96,000, but there could be cuts as great as a total of 115,000 DOD employees. That is huge.
What's the impact there on the agency and on the troop support?
Well, it leaves us with employees working a lot harder because we can't replace ones that we need to get rid of. The work doesn't all go away. Most of the work will stay there. We hope there's no impact on the troops. because we're going to do everything we can to keep them safe. They're the foot soldiers. We need them. But, you know, employees, civilian employees are going to have to work a lot harder. And, you know, I just don't know how we're going to do that. Because one of the things that we can't do is replace civilian employees with contractors and say that we've cut trillions of dollars from the defense budget, because we haven't when we do that.
Talk about that a little bit, about how allegedly contractor is cheaper than a federal employee, and the myth that's associated with that.
Well, we've learned that that when the contractor's in for profit, that's what they add on to the cost of these services contracts that they do with Department of Defense. The employees that work, the contractors that work for them, aren't getting the salary that federal employees are, or the benefits that federal employees are, and they're at will workers. So that leads to a lot of morale issues. But meanwhile, the taxpayer pays because that contractor's out making a profit. And if he can't turn a profit, then there's cost overruns. We got to go back. We got to use more tax dollars to pay that contractor, because obviously the DOD can't have contractors losing money. So
you're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Patty Viers, AFGE's president of 1148. You mentioned employee morale. What is employee morale like at DOD right now with all these changes and potential cutbacks looming?
You know, we're a proud workforce. And like I said at the beginning, it can't be any fun right now. You can't imagine it's any fun to be a DOD employee. So they are scared. They're worried about what's going to happen to our jobs. A lot of us have been around for a while, so we know that that some of us can retire and probably will retire regardless of what the economy is like, especially if they come after our discretionary things like our retirement and things like that. So people are watching. I know that I made a mistake and kept my TSP in the C fund, and I understand that this, you know, S&P and Dow Jones, everything is dropping. So that doesn't look good for me. It was a little bit of a nest egg because I'm a CSRS employee. I wasn't depending on that for my retirement. But for his employees who are depending upon that right now, not a good time.
For these DOD issues that are impacting the workforce, what has DEFCON's response been to that?
We're working right now with our political department, our legislative department, and the House Armed Services Committee to try to figure out what cuts are going to be, where they're going to be, and how hard they're going to be, so that we can start making our case and also talking to our employees to talk to their legislators about how we should not cut the Department of Defense to the bone just to save trillions and trillions of dollars.
What are you hearing from the House Armed Services Committee when you bring these issues up to them?
Well, they definitely feel our pain, and so they're between a rock and a hard place. They're going to get pushback from the employees, and they're going to get pushback also. I think the department and employees will be on the same side this time. It's what Congress is going to do. That's the unknown here.
In all of your time being an advocate for federal employees and your involvement with the union, have you ever seen a time when federal employees were under such an intense microscope?
You know, only one other time, and that was during Graham Rudman. I don't know if anybody remembers Graham Rudman, but it was early on in my career, so I wasn't really sure of how everything was going to affect me. But what I do know is they were asking employees to take leave without pay instead of taking their annual leave and their sick leave just to try to save money. I remember that times were really, really tough. We weren't getting any pay increases. You know, our pay has been frozen now for 2 years. So, you know, when that happened, it kind of reminded me of those times. Now, we made it through, and I believe that was during the Reagan years. We did make it through, but we took a beating then.
Final thoughts, Patty.
I love the Department of Defense. I love the federal government. I wouldn't work for any other employer. And my one goal in anything I've ever done is to leave it better than I found it. And so that's what I'm going to try to do. Leave the Department of Defense and the employees that work for the Department of Defense better than when I originally found them. So those are my final thoughts, Jason. It's been a thrill talking to you again.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE VA Local 2157 First Vice President Marsha Blaine will discuss the VA's commitment to providing top-quality patient care.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Marsha Blaine, first vice president of AFGE VA Local 2157 out of Portland, Oregon. Marsha, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So we have you here today at AFGE's Human Rights Training Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. What are you doing so far?
I am learning about collective bargaining. I have been actively involved in a couple bargaining sessions with the Portland Regional Office, where they process veterans' claims and disability determination.
Marsha, talk about how important it is for employees to have collective bargaining rights.
Well, if they don't have any rights in the workplace, the supervisor or the bosses determine everything that goes on that affects an employee.
Talk about maybe a situation or two that you've seen where an employee's collective bargaining rights have really been a benefit to them.
Promotion and the progression of promotion, being able to get time off granted, vacations being done by seniority, and being approved instead of who the boss prefers to have give the time off to.
Before the interview, you and I talked a little bit about the situation there in Portland, and you indicated that there seems to be an unusual amount of managers compared to frontline workers at the facility. Tell us a little bit about that.
Recently, there has been a hiring of chiefs of service that have another layer, an assistant, and quite a few layers of management, and not a lot of frontline hires. In other words, you have to go through a lot of supervisory levels to get something addressed at times.
And what's the impact on patient care?
A workforce that many times has frustration. They don't know who to go to. Other than they can't resolve issues at the first line level, and they don't know what else to do. They become frustrated.
In your opinion, would it be beneficial to the patient if the frontline workers had more freedom to make some decisions on the fly as a situation came up, as opposed to going through multiple levels of management?
That's also true, but also it would help eliminate the favoritism, where a supervisor prefers a certain individuals that will come in on their own time, start work 15 minutes early off the clock, and do extra things for the supervisor, and then the rest that do their work as they're expected, they're not treated always in the same fair and equitable way.
Now, you have a long and distinguished career caring for veterans, yourself a veteran. Tell us a little bit about your path to where you are today.
Well, I started in as a licensed practical nurse practicing in Oregon back in 1973 in private and nonprofit industry for the first 20 years. And I found that I couldn't get a raise. I would work for 2 years. I'd go to the boss, and I'd say, could I have a raise? And the only raise I was offered was a nickel. And I said, you can keep the nickel. And then I enjoyed some government unionized work, working for Baker County Health Department, a very small community in eastern Oregon. And I had union membership whether I wanted it or not. And from that point on, started my public retirement employees plan, which I had no idea what that consisted of. And now today I have a halfway decent retirement plan that the taxpayers of Oregon don't really like paying for. But I started that back in 1988. And I feel that I've done a lot of public service since then. I worked for Multnomah County Corrections as a jail nurse. I did that for 10 years. I was also worked for an institution in Salem, Oregon called Fairview Training Center, caring for adults and children that were kind of left in the state's care with severe seizures and mental disorders. So I have kind of a diverse background.
You also served in the Army, correct?
Yes. In my younger days at the end of the Vietnam War, I had the ability to learn what it's really like to take care of active duty personnel coming back from Vietnam, the ones that made it, and learning to really sharpen my skills as a licensed practical nurse.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Marsha Blaine, First Vice President for AFGE VA Local 2157. Marsha, what kind of satisfaction did you get out of serving our nation's veterans, not only in your time in the Army, but now today?
Well, I have to admit that they were my most favorite patients. They were very agreeable, they were extremely brave, and I have to say that they were my best patients, cooperative, and didn't give me a lot of trouble.
And so how important is it to you now, working at the VA, to make sure that these veterans get the highest quality of care that's possible?
Well, it's kind of hard for me as a nurse to make them put their call light on for a pitcher of cold water when they've been admitted and waited for an hour. And I tend to jump in and do stuff even though it's not in my role as an IV nurse on the patient support team. I had a lot of trouble in the first year because I kept trying to do everything for those veterans versus trying to stay focused on putting that IV in and drawing that lab test.
Your story is unique, but we've heard a number of federal employees who we've spoken to who go beyond the call of duty, who do more than what they're asked to do more than what they're paid to do. How does it make you feel knowing that now in today's political climate, federal employees are under such an intense microscope?
I think that the general public doesn't really realize what a lot of federal employees do. They are bought into the high cost or the price, and they don't really see all that goes on. And not enough veteran patients tell others what good care they get and spread the word.
Now, outside of the challenges that you mentioned earlier, what are some other challenges that you see in the VA system today?
Well, we get really caught up in trying to follow a lot of mandates and a lot of procedures, and we sometimes forget those basic things like answering that call light on time. And we get so caught up with those safety meeting that's mandated or a mandatory staff meeting, and sometimes the needs of the patient, it really should be at the forefront. Answering those call lights timely and doing all that we need to do to make their stay with us the very best.
Marsha, lastly, if there's one change that you would like to see implemented at the VA, what would it be?
Well, in our master agreement, we have Article 17. It's employee rights and respect for one another. That goes both sides of the table. Not an employee yelling an obscenity at a supervisor, and also a supervisor needing to talk to an employee about their behavior and taking him off to the side to a private room to correct them. If that could be followed more closely, I think we'd have a far better environment.
Marsha Blaine, First Vice President, AFGE VA Local 2157. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you to our guest this week, Maryland Citizens Health Initiative President Vinny DeMarco, AFGE Veterans Affairs Local 2338 President Kevin Ellis, 5th District National Vice President Everett Kelly, Defense Conference Vice Chair Patty Byers, and VA Local 2157 First Vice President Marsha Blaine. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife.